14th or 7. We will be having a public hearing and work session on House Bill 2406 relating to home care for medically involved children. We cannot open as a true subcommittee because I'm lacking a senator, and as soon as he comes, then we can go into a more formal process of hearing today. Mr. Whitten.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2406A engrossed is a bill that would allow the department to seek waivers from the federal government to add a program for medically fragile children, a waiver program under Medicaid for medically fragile children so that they could be served in their own homes. The fiscal impact is estimated to be about $1.4 million general fund along with associated federal matching funds, and that 1.4 is located in the SPD budget, the Seniors and People with Disabilities budget, along with the Division of Medical Assistance Programs, and also a little bit in department-wide support services.
Thank you very much. Is there a list for hearing? Representative Councilor Ranzani is standing up over there. Please join us. Is there anyone else to testify on this bill? Thank you.
Welcome. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sarah Gelser, and I am the state representative from Corvallis and Fort Wilmoth, and my district also includes two individuals that live in Linn County. I wanted to thank you very much for scheduling this bill today as a hearing and a work session. House Bill 2406 is a bill that's important to a lot of people across the state of Oregon, many of whom I assured it was not necessary to come here today because I know that many of you have had these families visit your office. They have emailed and telephoned you. Many of them came and testified during your hearing on the SPD budget, and I know that many of them have also come and visited you in your office. We had a hearing room full of these children with severe medical needs and their families and the Human Services and Women's Wellness Committee in early February, and Congresswoman Darlene Hooley joined us for a press conference to kick off awareness of this bill. This is a bill that will help keep children together, growing up at home with their families. I became interested in this issue several years ago when I had the great privilege to be an employee for Seniors and People with Disabilities. I got to work with Mary Lee Fay and James Taves, and one of my responsibilities was to learn more about children in Oregon who were growing up in nursing homes. We have about 60 of them, and I became curious about what is it that would cause a child to end up growing up in a nursing home. Just a couple of interesting facts. The average length of stay for an adult in a nursing home in Oregon is somewhere less than 6 months. For a child, it is somewhere north of 7 years. The longest length of stay, and I did this study about 3 years ago that I found for a child who had been admitted to a nursing home as a child, was 26 years. That's a really long time to live in a nursing facility. So I went back and began studying the case files of these children and found that there are so few supports that are available to these families who are raising children who require 24-hour care at home. And both in my studies of those case files and then meeting with families over the course of the past 3 years, I heard heartbreaking stories, and we've heard those in other committees. We've heard of individuals who cannot get married to their partners because doing so would cause them to lose their eligibility for Social Security benefits, which would mean their child would lose their Medicaid card, which would mean they would lose access to in-home care, which would mean they would lose custody of their child. We have heard of people who have divorced so that they can do those same things. We have heard of families that have bankrupted themselves, that have artificially impoverished themselves, all so that they can meet Medicaid requirements in order to care for their family, their children at home. And then there are other families who tried so hard to keep their kids there, who kept their jobs, who stayed up all night, who blew out their knees and their hips and their backs, caring for their kids, not eligible for any supports, and then needed to release custody of their children into nursing homes or foster care. What House Bill 2406 does is provide support to the families of these most medically involved children. We currently have a waiver that serves a population of kids that we call medically fragile, and these are kids that tend to be technology dependent. The kids that we're missing are those kids who are not eligible for that waiver because they can breathe on their own, they don't require technology, but they still require assistance in all activities of daily living. What these kids look like, these are kids that usually are not able to ambulate independently. They're in wheelchairs. They often do not eat orally. They usually are not able to communicate verbally. They may need to be turned during the night, sectioned during the night, and really require pretty consistent ongoing care and otherwise would be eligible for nursing home services. This bill, while it would help keep more children at home, it doesn't close nursing homes. It doesn't tell anyone that they have to come home from a nursing home placement or from the Providence Child Center or from any place else. But what it does is it asks the department to apply for this waiver and to consider the medical needs of the child, the needs of other family members with a disability or chronic illness in the family home, and the assistance that's necessary in order to keep the child in the family home. It also puts some priorities. It starts with 125 children beginning on January 1st of 2008 and allows the department to increase by 25 children per year until it hits the federal max of 200 kids. Yes, we have more kids in the state that need this, but that is the federal max for this waiver. So the bill has some criteria for triaging which kids would go there. And the first priority would be to a child transferring to the child's home from a nursing home placement, foster care, or other out-of-home placement. So if a family currently has the child out of home, only for the reason that they don't have these supports, we're going to try to take care of them first. A child that is at home and is at immediate risk for out-of-home placement. And then we've got a couple of other groups of kids that we're supporting in other ways that we're not getting federal match for. The first are kids who we're supporting through our family support programs. We have a handful of these kids that are receiving some of these supports, but we're paying for it with straight general funds. With this waiver, we would be able to get Medicaid match for those services, and in so doing, free up some more of those family support dollars to provide things like respite and other types of services for other families, the thousands of other families that have children with disabilities that are waiting for supports. And the last is a group of kids that currently are receiving some supports through the home and community-based waiver, but they're at risk of losing those services because if their parents' income edges up just a little bit, they lose their medical card, then they have to go back onto the waiting list to receive those services, which can be a couple of years long. We can move all these kids over in a cost-neutral way and provide some stability to their families. And the last, I guess there are five categories, sorry, is a child who is at risk of losing eligibility for medical assistance due to a caregiver's employment or increase in the caregiver's earnings. So this would mean if a family had an opportunity to take a job or to have a promotion, they would have the ability to apply for one of the slots on this waiver so that they were not giving up future financial opportunities or the ability to support their family and their other families just for the sole purpose of being able to have these services to keep their kids at home. This is a really good bill, and I'm really glad that you're hearing it. And I hope that you will give it your aye vote, and in so doing, you will be helping 125 kids grow up at home with their families and their brothers and sisters. And what you have at your places is a fact sheet that writes this out a little bit better, and also a copy of an editorial that the Oregonian ran last summer that said in it, Oregon lawmakers can keep these children in mind during the next legislative session. That's where we are here, when they fund programs for respite care and other at-home assistance. These programs help keep families intact, and they keep children out of nursing homes, foster care, and other costly places of last resort. Thank you for holding a work session on this. I'm so very grateful.
Thanks, Representative Williams. Questions? Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you very much for the presentation, and I really appreciate the work that you've done to come to me personally and talk to me about this and kind of bring me up to speed on it. The bill requires a waiver from the federal government, and you have an implementation date in here of January 1st of 2008. Do you think that the timeline and the need to get the federal waiver mesh together?
Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, thank you for that question. I do. It's my understanding that the department has begun work on writing the waiver. This isn't an unusual waiver. A lot of other states have these waivers, so it's not an unusual request, and I am very confident that there will be time to receive the waiver and get the program up and running.
Thank you. Further questions? Madam Chair, are you ready to move into
session? Just a minute.
I just wanted to make a comment real quick.
Sure. And Mr. Taze, why don't you join us at the...
Madam Chair, Representative Gessler, it's been a real pleasure to work with you on this, and I really appreciate you bringing this issue forward. I thought I knew pretty well everything was to know about DHS and the needy people in the state, and yet there's this huge gaping hole that I was only vaguely aware of, and you bringing this forward has made it real for us, and I'm glad we're doing this bill today. Thank you very much for your work.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Tage, in Section 6, line 24, says the Department of Human Services shall enroll no fewer than 125 medically children. What would be the effects of that mandate?
Madam Chair, I'm not sure.
In terms of future cost. Because what I'm trying to find out, we give you 1.6
Madam Chair, it's about $1.4 million of general fund was the department and the LFO's fiscal impact.
Yeah. Well, what I'm just trying to find out is your comments on this bill, Mr. Taves.
Well, we've been looking at this kind of waiver for a long time and supporting it. So that's, we fully support. We have a current waiver for really medically fragile kids that are mostly ventilator dependent.
Right.
And we serve over 100 of those kinds of kids. But if you're not completely technology dependent, then you sort of hit that gap, and the nursing home is the alternative, and because we don't have a different way of supporting families with expensive medical needs in their own home. So it does fill an important gap. And on the comment about whether or not the federal government will approve this in a timely fashion, these model waivers are I won't call them perfunctory, but there are so many of them around the country, and the federal government routinely approves these kinds of waivers. So I don't think it's problematic in terms of time frames.
Good. That's what we want you to put on record. Senator Wardley.
Are we in work session?
Going to work session on House Bill 2406. Excuse me, Senator Bradley. Ms. Boone.
Oh, I was going to have... Did you have a question? So I'm ready to move the bill.
Oh, I just have one question.
Okay.
And maybe either of you could answer it. How many kids total do we have in... I know this is only going to go up to 200 for the waiver, but how many kids totally do we have in the state who are could benefit from this?
Ballpark.
Madam Chair, Representative Bill, we have thousands of children living at home with their families, thousands and thousands. I couldn't give you an exact number. We have a family support program that supports roughly 1,000, I think it is, and a couple waivers that support another 150-200 kids. So the rest of the families, for the most part, fend for themselves. And
I think what I meant was in nursing home care now that would be moved home.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Sorry, I probably didn't make that.
Well, again, we have 60 or 70 kids in nursing homes now, and as Representative Gelser said, the intent of this is not to force moves out, but we would anticipate the number of kids that have to live in nursing homes is going to come way down as we provide these kind of supports to families. We also have another opportunity that we're working with the federal government called Money Follows the Person that will allow us to actually move the dollars out and get an accelerated rate match. And so that opportunity will also be available for kids currently in nursing homes if they and their families want to take that opportunity. So through the combination of the two, I would expect that the numbers that need to be in nursing homes will come way, way down.
And could I add?
You may.
This is going to make a big difference to those couple hundred kids, and of those thousands, not all of them are this medically involved, but Mr. Taves is correct in that we have thousands of kids with pretty chronic, complex, and very expensive needs across the state of Oregon, and I will be back talking with you next session about some other ways that we can continue to address some of those needs of those other families for whom this bill won't address those needs. These are the kids that are in most dire need right now, and really is going to make a big difference in their lives.
Cool.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2406A to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Senate Board A passes House Bill 2406 A and goes to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Comments or objections?
Just a comment, Madam Chair.
That's Representative Mulvey.
Thank you, Representative Gelser. This is a great thing you're doing.
Thank you.
Thank you. Madam Chair, to Representative Gelser and to Catherine White, you two women are amazing, wonderful, remarkable champions. Thank you for your leadership.
House Bill 2406 has passed without objections. Thank you very much. Representative Gelser, would you like to carry this on the House side?
I would be delighted to carry this bill on the House side.
Okay.
Thank you.
And the full committee, to the full committee, volunteers on the House side, Representative Goride, on the Senate side, Dr. Bates. Close the hearing on work session on 2406 and open the public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 157A relating to the Home Care Commission. Mr. Vitton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 157A is linked to the Department of Human Services Seniors and People with Disabilities budget. And Mr. Sorensen is going to pass out a staff measure summary from the policy committee that took this, that worked on this bill. This allows the Home Care Commission to enter into interagency agreements or contracts with state agencies. It provides compensation to home care workers who attend appropriate training. This bill determines the process by which the commission will be funded. This, as I understand it, solves a problem that has been in the works ever since the Home Care Commission was created through Ballot Measure 99. Initially, this bill was to create an independent state agency, but that has been modified somewhat to create a commission that will work closely with the Department of Human Services to oversee the home care worker program. With that, I will turn it back to you and note that Mr. James Taves could comment on this further.
Mr. Taves. I'm sure Dr. Goldberg is glad to hear we left him in hot soup today.
Exactly what I told him.
Chair Carter and members of the committee, James Tate from the Department of Human Services Senior and Disability Programs. Very briefly, and probably the simplest way to explain this is when the Home Care Commission was created in 1999 by ballot measure, there was a clause in the actual Constitution that said no employees of the Home Care Commission can be state employees. The intent was clearly to imply that home care workers themselves could not be state employees. But it was silent in terms of what the actual employees that would support the commission's work would be. But since the language is plain language on its face, both it and the enabling statute, which mirrored that language, means you can't have state employees supporting the commission. We've had many attorneys over the past 4 years try to figure out then what is this commission really, because most semi-independent commissions created in government are supported by state employees. They therefore get support from the Attorney General's office, from DAS, and all the usual things. And here, by sweeping in under the original language that the commission employees can't be state employees, we've then said, well, then they have to be public employees. And then all the lawyers start arguing, well, then it's SAFE, or it's OHSU, it's some other kind of creature. So we kept trying to craft language that would somehow say it was an agency separate, but it was a hybrid that could still be supported by state employees, get all the usual kinds of government support, because the concern was if we had to create a completely independent state agency or non-state agency with public employees, we would have to set up a whole accounting system, budget system, and all the machinery that would go with that. So we finally landed on a very simple solution. We will delete from the statute any reference to employees for the commission at all, and the commission then will enter into an interagency agreement with the Department of Human Services. The Department of Human Services will provide all the staffing support, budget support, accounting, and all the other support services. The director of the Department of Human Services will appoint the person that will serve as the lead staff person from the department with consultation with the governor's office and the Home Care Commission itself. So it gets around that whole issue of public versus state employee, resolves the issue of spinning them off, setting up a whole different set of machinery to make this thing work. And I think it's after many hours, many years of trying to figure out how to place this in state government, we think this is the best fit, and we have to do something. We've been advised repeatedly by both DAS and the Attorney General's office that now the commission has its employees, but because we had not figured out a place for this, they're double-filled employees of the Department of Human Services. So it's not a legal arrangement based on both constitutional and statutory language. So this, we believe, and all the attorneys and the advocates and SEIU and others, we've all met, and I think agree that this is a hybrid. It will work, and we would recommend that you move it forward. With that, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the A and Gross bill, if I'm reading this correctly, on line seven, first page, line 17-18, it talks about charge and collect fees. I wonder from whom those fees will be collected.
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, and I could probably call him right here. The Home Care Commission does a lot of training and a lot of work with home care workers, and we're also anticipating over time that they'll be able to train people that might provide in-home support to private pay individuals who aren't necessarily part of the regular home care program. They would be able, as part of those trainings and events, to collect fees for that. So this simply would authorize them to do that.
So, Madam Chair, if I understand correctly, these fees will be charged to people who are getting the training.
Madam Chair Carter and committee members, my name is Cheryl Sanders. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Home Care Commission. Those fees are in regards to individuals who attend the home care worker trainings who are not home care workers. And we have had people come, they want to receive the training. It's very beneficial for individuals like foster home folks, etc. And so what we would like to do to defray the cost of the materials and the trainer is to just charge a minimal fee for that.
One follow-up question, Madam Chair. Okay. The rest of the sentence beyond say for persons who are not current, and I understand that, or prospective home care workers. It would seem like prospective home care workers are the people you'd be wanting to train. I just don't quite understand the sentence there. If you're thinking you're going to become a home care worker and a program is offered, it seems to me that's what you want to attend. Why would you exclude them from this?
Senator Carter, Chair Carter, and Senator Bates, we plan only to charge those individuals who are not home care workers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just had a question on terms of what we'd be seeing for the next biennium in terms of the Home Care Commission. Would we be seeing, and maybe this is a question for legislative fiscal, would we be seeing this as a separate commission with a separate budget? For example, similar to the Children and Families Commission, so they would not be part of DHS when they come back for a budget request next year. I'm just trying to understand how that would work in terms of them asking for their budget approval next cycle.
Madam Chair and Representative Kotak, I can give you my understanding, but I don't know that it's correct. That's the problem. I don't think you'll see a separate agency. This is not, as I understand it, intended to create a brand new state agency. This is a commission that works jointly with the Department of Human Services, but it is not a separate state agency, so it won't have a separate budget per se.
That's why they made it
via an interagency agreement, so that it would not operate as a separate agency. It gives permission for those people who are working in the Department of Human Services to staff it, and also that connection is done there under legal aegis, as opposed to meeting like they meet now, because they're meeting illegally, actually.
Well, thank you for the clarification. I guess my concern would be that if they were completely separate, you know, they'd be an entity all by themselves fighting for a little pot of money. Is there anything somewhat similar at all in DHS? This is the only model of this, period.
Madam Chair, Representative Kotek, I mean, this model is unique to state government, which is why there's been so much sort of inquiry on how this is going to work. But in response to your question, it will remain part of the department's budget on line 19 of page 1 of the bill. It says the commission and the department will confer on the necessary budget amounts, and the department then, when we come to agreement, will include that in the governor's budget request. So it would come back to you through the department's budget, not through a separate commission budget.
Thank you.
And we do have a like, I think a similar piece of that is, that would be the Department of Education, because it goes to the governor's office in terms of its budget, and yet it's a standing entity. Mm. Representative Garrard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm following up on Senator Bates' question, because I'm not sure of the response he got, and the more I read the bill, the little more I become confused. But paragraph D under section 2 says, charge and collect fees as prescribed by rule for persons who are not current or prospective home care workers to attend training sessions. If you're not current or a prospective home care worker, why would you attend the training sessions?
Madam Chair, Representative Garrard, because it's really good training. And for example, family caregivers who don't receive any assistance from the state, but you or I are caring for our aging parents, the training is excellent in terms of safety and all kinds of things that you really need to know to support a person in their own home. And as Cheryl said, foster care providers find the training to be very effective. So it's a very good training product. We have an identified budget amount for home care workers themselves that's in the department, the commission's budget for that purpose, but there is no separate budget for other individuals. So to defray the cost of that and make it more broadly available for people who would find it useful, we think that's a good idea.
Madam Chair?
You may.
How many people would be in that category?
I don't have an Senator, sorry.
That's right.
Senator Carter, Chair, and committee members, Representative Garrard. I do not have exact number. I would say over the year, approximately 100 individuals have went through. We have had up to date over just about 1,500 home care workers have been trained. Total attendance, which would include those individuals, have been 3,688 folks. And 340 classes have been held. We have 12 different classes that we offer. They cover things like confidentiality, record keeping, boundaries and professional issues, communication skills, person-directed values, safety issues, including avoiding injuries, preventing disease transmission and emergency planning, information and management techniques on conditions such as dementia, diabetes, vision loss, grief and loss, protective service fraud and abuse issues. Wow. So we have a number of individuals that find this to be beneficial to assist them. As I mentioned earlier, foster home individuals have come. People who provide private care are interested. It's just not much available out in the community, and we're able to do this and provide this service for Oregonians.
Just the cost of bookkeeping on this versus the revenue you receive from it, does it balance out, or is it?
Chair Carter, committee members, Representative Garrard, I believe that would be minimal because it would be a small number, and we hope to defray that cost by making this minimal charge.
Madam Chair.
Senator Bates and then Representative Morgan.
First off, I agree with what you're trying to do. I think it's a great thing. It's a good program. That's right. I think you got a Scribner's error here. Cause I don't think what this says is what you want to do. I think it should read, charge and collect fees as prescribed by rule from persons who are not current home care workers who attend training sessions sponsored by the commission. I think that's what you're trying to do. I think they've got it down wrong here. I think it's a Scribner's error. I hear what you want to do. You want to have people who are not present home care workers but who want to get the training and come in, and you want to be able to charge them a small fee for taking the program. And I don't think that's what a sentence says right now. And I don't think you want to exclude prospective people because people might want to come and get the training and become home care workers at a later time. You got a great program. You want to keep going. Don't get me wrong. I don't guess what this says. I think this is sort of a nonsensical sentence to me. Maybe I've been up too long.
We'll see.
You know, that make, this sentence makes sense to everybody else, but not. Am I the only one?
Well, you know, I've been looking at the sentence. I think it's an awkwardly worded sentence, but the intent has been made clear by the witness. So that's how I've been looking at the language.
I'm afraid somebody else can look at that language and not get the message.
Chair.
Senator. Representative Morgan, then Senator Marsett.
I appreciate Senator Bates' point. I think that the discussion in the committee is probably going to help clarify this if it ever becomes an issue. I have concerns over whether the revenue that's going to be generated is going to be worth the trouble to track it. And I think it would be an interesting point if when the next group of folks that got to go through this issue had some information. I know that all the work that we've done on the administrative side of DHS, it is extremely expensive to track all that stuff through, and I think it would be worthwhile to take a look at the costs against the benefits. And again, I think that the training is very important and very good, but I just would like to make sure that charging people for it really does bring money to the agency and doesn't cost more than the charges actually bring in.
Chair Carter, Representative Morgan, yes, we can look into that for you.
Senator
Marsha. Thank you, Madam Chair. All the time this bill was in front of my committee and we wrestled with it and you went back and amended it several times, I did not notice the what I think is a Scribner's error in that line, because in charge and collect fees as prescribed by rule, you have four persons who are not current. It should be you're collecting them from them instead of for them, because this implies you're going to give them money. So
that's not your mistake.
Madam Chair, Representative, that's my point. I think Senator Bates is right, and we just didn't catch it.
Exactly. Yeah.
But this bill, we dealt with this bill for quite a while in my committee, and it's a good bill, and I know that you've struggled with it in trying to make all of the adjustments, and I think it's great.
Thank you, Senator.
Madam Chair. Do I need to, before I make a motion, do I need to offer a friendly amendment of wordsmithing?
Yes. I think so.
Okay.
This reads, we're going to pay people to come to those meetings.
Absolutely. We'll make a friendly amendment.
Well, I have not been up to it.
I will make a friendly amendment to reflect Dr. Bates' eloquent wording, rewording of the sentence in line 19?
Yeah, 17. If I'm allowed to, I'm going to drop out perspective also, if you don't.
Wait
a second.
Okay. No?
I want to understand what we're doing here.
We're changing four to from,
yes.
Okay.
So the sentence should read now in section 2, line 17, charge and collect fees as prescribed by rule from persons who are not current or prospective home care workers.
And then you got to change 2 to who?
Or for the that's good. Two to who?
Who are we speaking to?
I'm sorry. Excuse me.
For all the places you go.
Yeah, you have a motion on the floor. Can I have you withdraw your motion?
Madam Chair, I will withdraw my motion.
Okay. Prerogative of the chair. We will carry over Senate Bill 157 until tomorrow, Friday. I will now close the hearing on the public hearing on Senate Bill 157A.
Madam Chair,
Mr. Deputy,
if I can clarify, this committee would like the amendment to how it would like to modify this bill. That would be helpful.
Can I work with you on that, Mr. Britton?
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Two words.
Yeah. Well, changes.
Physician. Excuse me. Mr. Britton, your point.
Just to clarify so that we have agreement here, perhaps some discussion about what the amendment should do, we can get that.
Mr. Brennan, I'd like to ask you, along with Mr. Taves, as Senator Bates want to be engaged, the three of you will bring back language that is indicative of the intent of this legislation on tomorrow. Thank you very much. Issue done with. We will move now to work session on House Bill 5031, Department of Human Services, Citizens and People with Disabilities. Thank you. Mr. Britton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Sorensen is going to pass out a memo and a spreadsheet similar to the ones that you have seen before from Ms. Baker on the children, adults, and families, and from me yesterday on health services. As I did yesterday, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on the memo, except to point out the fact that you see on the front page of that memo the 2003-05 actual costs for the DHS Seniors and People with Disabilities program, totaling about $2.2 billion. You see the 2005-07 legislatively approved budget as approved through May 2007 in Senate Bill 5547. You see the governor's recommended budget at $2.8 billion and the LFO recommended budget at $2.9 billion. The LFO recommended budget is about 17.1% in terms of general fund, higher than that in the current biennium. And it's about 14.2% total funds higher than the current biennial budget for this program area. The memo.
What's that number again, Mr. Britton?
It's on right below the chart, Madam Chair, about the third line down.
Gotcha.
17% higher in terms of general fund, 14.2% in terms of total funds.
Thank you.
And then there are a number of highlights that we'll hit in just a second as we go through the spreadsheet. This memo on the second page also lists five performance measures related to this particular program area. Ms. Baker and I will be talking about performance measurements on Tuesday, but you can see them listed here. We may have some budget notes with respect to the seniors and people with disabilities. I don't quite remember that right off the top of my head. We have a number of them. And finally, on the last page, we are recommending that the subcommittee approve a preliminary budget that you'll be seeing in just a second.
Madam Chair, I have a question on procedure. If we did budget notes, do we do them just on budget item numbers, or do we do policy too? Or can we do that?
Normally, we don't do policy and ways and means. What we do budget notes that give the department some direction that we want them to return with the next time. But we don't do policy.
Okay.
We're not supposed to do policy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before we leave this page that's in front of us to look in more detail, I'd like to clarify something with staff, and if I'm interpreting the numbers wrong, I'd like to know now. On the front page of this June 13th memo, I'm looking at the line for total funds, and if I'm reading the numbers right, it looks like the governor's recommended budget for 0709 is 2.836. The LFO recommended is 2.876. And the reason I want to make sure I understand this is I think this is rather remarkable, because when we have more than $400 million, for example, that had been included in a recommended budget that didn't exist, and we've been struggling to try to find how to pay for programs and services without as much revenue had been hoped for, what we have generally seen in most budgets is we're having to scale back some from what we call the GRB.
Right.
And in this one, it looks like this proposal has managed to actually show somewhat of an increase over the GRB. I want to make sure that we highlight that, because this is rather remarkable.
Representative Nathanson, thank you so much for bringing that up, because this is an enhanced budget. And I want people who have been involved in this process and who have been supporters of this process to know I wish we could have had enough money to get back to 05, 07 levels with this budget. I really, really do wish we could have done that. But we just have not had the money, and I hope that you will appreciate the fact of the increase in the enhanced amounts in this budget, and that we won't, you know, stop fighting for the good of those of us. You see, I used to say those seniors. Now I'm a senior, so those of us that are seniors and people with disabilities, that we have worked very hard. I hopefully have listened well to what you as a committee have said. But now is the time to ask the questions that you want heard and any comments and thoughts that you have at this particular time. Or shall we just go through it? We only have about 10 more minutes here.
We have until 3:30.
Do we have time? Why don't we? Okay, Senator Marcia, because I know you were first when you wanted to talk, and then we'll come to Senator Bates.
Okay, thank you. Madam Chair, in my Substance Committee this time, the Policy Committee, we dealt with a number of issues that were very traumatic, and we've dealt with them in this committee, and I'm not sure that we're getting the funding for the programs that need the funding that we have been dealing with. And so I have a recommendation for budget notes dealing with the AAA levels of service, that levels of acuity that we're not dealing with, and I would like the department to come back to the Policy Committee, whether or not I'm the chair, with some information that we need to deliberate and come back in either February or next session to make a stronger case for funding for some of these areas. Now, there are two areas, and the other one deals with independent living, Project Independence, which we're not dealing with the disabled people. The statute requires that we deal with disabled. We're not doing that. We're dealing with the seniors. We need to have the department work on this, come back to the committee, and we need to discuss it fully during the interim. So I do have a request for budget notes and for those two areas.
Okay, let me just reorganize a little bit, if you guys don't mind. Let's have Mr. Britton to go through the budget completely, and then you can point to a particular line after that, if that's okay with you. Senator Bates.
Well, I was going to offer, Madam Chair, that if others want to do that, that's great. Okay, I mean, it's a big budget. I want to thank you for your leadership in this situation. We're actually getting our budget levels back on an inflationary basis, 99 to 2001. And despite some recent criticism of you, you've done a great job doing this. And I appreciate your leadership on it. You've put new things into this. You've done the best you could to make this budget work. And I know we'd like to have more organs, 45th, 46th, 47th, in revenue in the United States. We need more revenue. But that's a different discussion. You did the best what you had available to us, and I appreciate your leadership. Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to use some of the board as our first challenge in terms of revenue.
We had the revenue discussion on your absence yesterday.
I'm not fixing the previous bill.
That's
sorry.
That's great.
Yes. I just have to piggyback Senator Bates. I don't know who would have the audacity in the first place to be critical of your leadership and what's been going on. This is a very difficult, and I've sat where you've sat, so I know how difficult it is balancing all the needs that exist in human services. And for the record, I would challenge anyone who think that they can do better to come forth, because I don't think that exists. And when you have the many competing needs that you have in the human services budget, which is the second largest budget in the state, which has the most complicated funding streams of all budgets, the educational budget is a piece of cake compared to the Department of Human Services budget. And it's also the budget that has, over the years, since we enacted Measure 5, in this state, that has had its base funding base eroded. And if those out there who think that it's an easy task when you have everything from foster care needs to juvenile needs to runaway kids to senior needs, you name it, if it has a human face to it, this body deals with it. So I think you've done incredible leadership, and I don't know who's critical, but here's one person who's been there right, and know that you've done an outstanding job. So you can call me.
All right. Thank you.
When you get rid of them, I'll take care of them.
Yes. We have this trend that I will double up on Senator Winters, and I just want you to know, I think some people call Margaret a princess, but I think she's the queen. I'm sorry. Queen Carter.
Mr. Wooten.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to walk through the spreadsheet at this point. It's divided into two major pieces like the ones that you've seen before. The agency reshoot request issues on one side of your paper, and I'd like to start with those. The rest of it on the back side are the LFO recommended adjustments based on what the co-chairs have recommended along with your chair. So with that, I'd start with the agency reshoot request issues. Again, you have heard about these before. These should not be totally new to you. You can see on line one the governor's recommended budget that was submitted back in January, or in December, to the legislature. And then we start on line three with higher caseloads and slightly higher costs in terms of nursing facilities, adding about almost $5 million of total funds, $2 million of general fund. Line four.
Before we go from there, I want to publicly recognize and thank Mr. Carlson and his staff for good work that we've had this session and his ability to cooperate and to just be a wonderful partner in our relationship this session. So thank you very much. Ms. Clinton.
Line four. This is the result of the fact that the federal government changed the statute with respect to provider taxes. This one that is at issue here is the nursing facility provider tax. Previous to, I believe, January of 08, and I think that's right, yes, it's right there. I have to read my own spreadsheet. The provider tax within federal law was allowed to be up to 6%. now, and that's exactly what we have been charging over these past 4 years, and will continue to charge through December 31st of this year. However, that ceiling has been lowered by the federal government to 5.5%. We use that nursing facility provider tax funding for nursing facility reimbursement. So if we don't have those provider tax funds, we need to use general fund in lieu of those. So that's why there's a general fund add here, a reduction in other funds expenditure limitation. Line 5 is a higher Oregon supplemental insurance program caseload forecast that has increased our general fund cost by about $181,000. OSIP is a required program that, in effect, is maintenance of effort. These are small, relatively small payments that are made to recipients of supplemental security income in this state.
I apologize for interrupting, and I don't know if you want to deal with these as we go along, but the other issue that I think is extremely important that we're not going to deal with this budget is the assisted living rates that are causing providers to put people out of the assisted living facilities, and that is something that we really, really need to look at during the interim, and that's the other budget note that I think needs to be included, is to direct staff to do the study and help us figure out how we're going to keep people in that Medicaid people in the nursing home, in the assisted living homes. So that's a huge issue.
Thank you, Senator Morrison.
Line 6 is a higher community-based caseload for persons with developmental disabilities. That's about $4.3 million of line 6. In other words, it's more. And because there is projected to be higher federal participation, that is more persons who are eligible for Medicaid within this program, that offsets that 4.3 by about $0.7 million, hence the $3.6 million general fund cost here. The department reports that it will adopt two new Staley brokerages earlier than expected. Staley settlement brokerages provide or broker services for support services for persons with developmental disabilities. This is a general fund cost here in the reshoot of about $222,000 general fund, matched with $240,000 of federal funds. Line 8 is a grant for the Oregon Council on Developmental Disabilities of about $700,000, and it funds 6 positions and 5.5 FTE. Like the health services area, much of the seniors and people with disabilities area is funded with Medicaid. That Medicaid rate has changed just a bit several thousandths and one ten-thousandths of a percent. And this is the additional general fund cost associated with that change within this particular area. It's about $837,000. And as you folks know, whenever the FMAP or the federal participation rate changes one way or the other, it really costs us or saves us money.
So that's kind of one of those issues that we never get positive incentives for doing good. If we're doing very good, then the feds take away.
The FMAP, as I think Senator Winters is alluding to,
goes up here.
If our economy improves and our wages go up, the FMAP is reduced.
Right.
On line 10, we just talked about Senate Bill 157. This is additional cost within a reshoot to fund the Senate Bill 157A that was added. In the governor's recommended budget, there was about $159,000 of general fund, and this would add to it. Line 11 is a small change to two components within two reductions that were made in the governor's recommended budget. One was to nursing facility rates related to, I believe, children who are to be or who could be moved out of nursing facilities, and the other one was related to a state-operated community program closure. And that closure actually happened in 2005 in the current biennium, but there's some additional savings from some efficiencies gained in that particular program. Line 12 is an adjustment to policy option package 109. This was a $3 million policy option package in the governor's recommended budget to increase CNA staffing in certain nursing facilities. This was a slight adjustment to that policy option package. Policy option package 10228 was the addition of Area Agency on Aging funding to get them to 95% of what it would cost for an equivalent state office. The department here has modified that policy option package and said that that would cost about $2.9 million general fund less, and in here in the reshoot that was matched with another $2.9 million of federal funds. And I'll be talking about that in just a moment. I have a correction to make to that particular adjustment. Line 14 is caseload staffing changes. Based on a new caseload forecast and on a correction that was made in the reshoot, about $500,000 of that 3.2 was a correction to the governor's recommended budget. The remaining 2.7 relates to a caseload forecast increase. Line 15 is a lower in-home caseload forecast along with higher client contributions. This results in general fund savings of about $4.2 million. And you can see the client contribution amount has gone up with respect to other funds of $1.3 million. There was also some related federal matching funds. Line 16, lower community-based care. As Senator Morissette indicated, there are some issues with assisted living and adult foster home care rates. We heard about those in the public hearings on this particular budget. Those caseloads combined are expected to be a little bit lower than what they were in the governor's recommended budget.
Just a quick question. Do we have any idea why these caseloads in 15 and 16 are going down, and are they likely to come back up during the biennium, or is this sort of an unknown?
Madam Chair and Senator Bates, I'm not sure that the caseloads are coming down or declining. They are lower than what they were in the governor's recommended budget. I can speak somewhat to the in-home caseload, at least give you a hypothesis that many of us have discussed, and that is that the Medicare Part D benefit has dampened the need for people to go on in-home care to obtain the OHP Medicaid drug benefit, and that has dampened that caseload somewhat.
Not going as fast.
Line 17, the department is projecting higher estate recovery revenue. You can see that under other funds, about $2.3 million of other funds, which is used to offset general fund. And finally, a variety of other technical adjustments and transfers, the largest being the move of the lifespan respite program from SPD over to the Administrative Services Division, the department-wide support services. So the overall reshoot request, or the repricing of the governor's budget based on new information and looking at corrections that needed to be made in the governor's recommended budget, is about $3.5 million general fund lower than what was submitted with respect to this budget back in December. Total funds increased about $559,000.
questions thus far?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Line 18, the lifespan respite transfer. This is something that I think is really important to keep an eye on, because in the past we've had an obligation to try to make this program work in a way that actually works for folks out in the community, needing some access to providers who can provide the respite care they need, whether it's an adult or a child. And I would like the department to come back sometime in the future to give us an update, sooner rather than later, so about how the transfer is working and what you're doing.
Maybe let's listen to any recommendations you can add, adjustments over there, and Mr. Whitten could respond to that.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Kotek, I will note that the rationale for that move, at least according to the reshoot materials I received, was to increase visibility and support for that program. So it's being moved into the director's office, as opposed to within where it is now in SPD.
Which is great. So we look forward to an update when there's one to give.
Madam Chair? Thank you. I would like to discuss the response we got about the forecast for lower income caseload, which, if I heard it right, was in part due to Medicare Part D drug benefit. Because it's providing some benefits now, did I hear this right, that, or interpret it correctly, that fewer people are driven to the point of asking for services that aren't quite as critical for their well-being, just so they can get help with being able to buy prescription drugs? Is that what?
Madam Chair and Representative Nathanson, let me try and clarify what I said. I think it's twofold. I think the fact that there is a Medicare Part D benefit provided by the federal government has helped people who may otherwise have deteriorated quicker and gone on to the in-home caseload. But there's another effect here that I was trying to get at earlier. I think in the past there were a number of folks who probably needed in-home care, but if there was any question about that, the fact that when you become eligible for Medicaid in-home care, you also become eligible for Oregon Health Plan Medicaid, which included a drug benefit. And that was almost more, perhaps even more important than the actual in-home care hours that they received.
Thank you. The clarification certainly helps. I feel like I understand it much better now. But this is another example of why I hope we can get to comprehensive reform of the healthcare system, so that it makes sense and we're helping people at the point that they need help before they need additional help, and before the lives for them and their families is impacted even further. Thank you.
Madam Chair. Senator Winters, Representative Nathan brought up an interesting point, one that most of us who've been on the budget panel wrestle with constantly over the years, because on the one hand, when I mentioned earlier in my conversation that the Department of Human Services budget has more funding streams than any other in state government, but it's also shifts more than any other because of the federal control. And it's the federal control, whether we're talking Medicare or Medicaid, that has us dancing, and sometimes dancing to tunes that we don't want to dance to. And if we had our druthers, we would design and develop our own delivery system. But since we don't have our druthers, and that we have to constantly go say, Mother, and sometimes Father, may I, we're at an extreme disadvantage. And that puts us in those kind of dilemmas. So when Medicare Part D came in to being, that provided some assistance. And the feds are very, very, very good, because they figure out when they provide us with some relief, then they find another little program over there with others that they do a takeaway. They take it away with one hand and give it with the other. So just have to put that on. I think that's the dance that we deal with.
That's true.
That's true. Mr. Berman?
Yes, Madam Chair, just remember the discussion of the clawback we had yesterday.
What example? Give it to me, take it away.
With respect to the LFO recommended adjustments, line 21 is a correction to the reshoot. When Ms. Baker was looking at some positions in the children, adults, and families area, they actually found some money that should have been added into the seniors and people with disabilities budget, total funds of about $77,000. Lines 22 and 30 are really the same thing. They go together and they total $8 million. This is for more provider rate increases for those who provide services for persons with developmental disabilities.
I just want to know if I heard you right or not. Did you hear me? The $3.1 million? Thank you very much.
It's $8 million of general fund in addition to $12 million in the governor's recommended budget. This would provide wage increases of about a dollar an hour and 37% up from 28% for OPE, other payroll expenses, for 17 months during the 07-09 biennium.
Mr. Britton, would you repeat that?
The $8 million in this reshoot, along with $12 million that was in the governor's recommended budget, is $20 million. And when that is matched with federal funds, it would provide wage increases of about a dollar an hour, and other payroll expenses would go up from 28%, which is the current level, up to about 37%. And this would be done for 17 months during the 07-09 biennium.
Senator Morse?
What is it, a 60-40 federal match, 40-60?
Approximately, yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, in the interim, it doesn't have to be done today, but it would be well to have how closer are we getting to some form of parity, because I think still one of our goals and objectives is to try to, over time, to bring about some parity in this whole wage issue. And so if the department is listening to me and the providers are listening, it would be nice to have those comparisons and those numbers as we move along the future.
But Mr. Law Senator, because the providers came in with a budget of trying to get back to where they were, and they needed about $60 million, and so we were able to near $21 million. So we're still off, but we're trying to make strides forward.
And I think that's good, Madam Chair. I just don't want us to lose our momentum.
That's right.
Thank you. Just briefly, Madam Chair, thank you. Well, first, thank you for prioritizing this issue, and I think the DD provider community has done an excellent job of explaining the disparity issues. One of the things I would like to see from them when we come back is how that's affected your retention, if at all. I'm assuming it'll have some positive impact. It's not the 69 that would bring you up to the parity levels, but that should make some impact, hopefully, in retaining workers and keeping your experienced people. So I would look forward to hearing how that's helped in that regard. Thank you.
Mr. Burton.
Lines 23 through 29 are all co-chair budget adjustments that were made last March or announced last March. Line 23 would reduce the nursing facility certified nursing assistant staffing increase by half. This was $3 million. There was some added in the reshoot. We just talked about that. This would cut that in half. Line 24, the Board of Nursing budget was passed without a general fund addition of $100,000 that had been included in the seniors and people with disabilities budget. So we're removing that $100,000 in line 24. The co-chairs reduced the AAA equity issue, that is the comparison of transfer AAA compensation with respect to state comparable state offices to 90% rather than 95% as was in the governor's recommended budget.
DHS.
May I ask a question, Lori? Mr. Britton, how does that line relate to line 13?
That's an excellent question, Representative Morgan, and I have a further adjustment that you'll see in a second.
Oh, okay.
But line 13 was simply a reshoot of the budget, whereby the department said that in order to reach 95% equity, it would cost $2.9 million general fund less than was calculated in the governor's recommended budget. This reduces the remaining amount by $2.7 million to get to 90% of equity.
So the net result is that they're at 90%.
That's correct. But I have another adjustment in just a second I'm going to talk about.
Thank you.
Line 26 has again to do with Senate Bill 157. As I noted, the original budget had about $159,000 of general fund in it. The co-chairs have removed that. They were not inclined to do Senate Bill 157. However, since changes were made to that bill, the co-chairs have added $100,000 along with reshoot money that we talked about just a second ago on line 10. This is the net of all of that with respect to seniors. There was also an effect in, I believe, department-wide support services. So we're not covering the full cost of that. I think the agency is about $50,000 short, but this is what the co-chairs worked out with Dr. Goldberg, and that is what's in this budget at this point.
Madam Chair.
Senator Morse.
Thank you. Line 24, the Board of Nursing. I hope I didn't understand you to say that we removed $100,000 from the board. That we gave them before in order to hire additional investigators, which they need.
Chair Carter and Senator Morissette, there was $100,000 of general fund included in the DHS budget in here in the governor's recommended budget for DHS for the Board of Nursing. It was not used in the Board of Nursing budget that was passed by this assembly. So we're not giving the Board of Nursing the $100,000 that had been put in the DHS budget for them.
Was that the bill that we carried that passed out of here earlier? I carried the bill on the floor that would have enhanced in order for them to be able to hire three investigators.
Yes, Chair Carter and Senator Morissette, the bill that I presume you carried, if it was a budget bill,
yeah,
may have given them that enhancement, but it didn't do it with general fund. They probably did it with
They still have the enhancement, though.
Yes.
Good. Okay, that's important at this point.
Saturday?
No, that was my memory, too. I was trying to help out with the bill.
Line 27, in the governor's recommended budget, part of the policy option package 90 would have closed the Eastern Oregon Training Center, saving $1.1 million. A decision was made by the co-chairs not to do that, so we're adding the Eastern Oregon Training Center back into this budget. However, there'll be an adjustment in just a few lines down to that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I understand that this issue will be assessed and evaluated prior to the next session. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. My question to the Chair was what your pleasure was in following up with this. I'm just wondering what the mechanism will be. Because as you see in the other one, that there will be some phase out, there are some plans.
Right.
Make sure we hear that.
That's a decision that the leadership is going to be discussing.
Right.
We have not made a firm decision on this. But some of us want to be able to see this add back here today.
And I understand for the beginning of the biennium, but in terms of the longer term.
Right.
So look forward to hearing more on that conversation.
Good.
Thank you.
Madam Chair and members, line 28 removes some tobacco tax, other funds limitation. that had been included in this budget to increase the OHP standard population. It was funded with new tobacco tax. As we did yesterday, we're recommending that you remove limitation of $339,915,000 of tobacco tax and associated federal match that had been in the governor's recommended budget. Line 29 is a reduction to the Oregon Project Independence expenditure limitation to $12.6 million from $16.6 million in the governor's recommended budget. As you know, the OPI fund is funded with transfers from the senior property tax deferral account, and actually the transfer from the senior property tax deferral account to the OPI fund is supposed to be around $20 million or $21 million for the 07-09 biennium, but it is expected to fall to about $9.6 million in the following biennium. So consequently, the co-chairs wanted to retain some funding in the OPI fund that can be used for OPI along with the new addition or the additional money that would come from the senior property tax deferral account in 09-11. In other words, they wanted to keep this sustained for at least two biennia.
Question, Madam Chair?
Representative Morgan?
Thank you. With regard to the total OPI budget, where does this put it in terms of the budget for this biennium?
The current budget for OPI is about $12.25 million. This would represent about a 3% increase.
So this is a roll-up. This gives the level.
It is about a 3% increase, yes.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Marcel?
I just want to put on the record one more time that we are not fully funding OPI the way the statute requires us to by covering the disabled community. We do not have the money to do that. We should have the money. We should put more money in so we can, from the general fund, to cover the disabled community.
During some of our conversation, we talked about OPI and whether or not a standard consistent sliding scale could be developed for individuals who may want to have access and use OPI based on income don't, and that we never have had a standardized a tool. And I would ask the department and the AAAs to come up with that kind of methodology. So that we could be consistent across the state, and so that even, because we heard from individuals who may want to use a project independence but may think that they make too much money, and yet it could be that they could pay some for the individuals. And since this is all general funding, we're not bound by the federal waivers and the federal requirements, you know, it may be a way of us opening it up. But I would also have to piggyback and second my colleague from
Representative Gerard. And can I say we have 5 minutes because the Education Committee meets and here and would like to, and I had expected to pass this. We won't worry about passing it today. We'll just carry it over. Senator Gerard.
Well, again, just to also join my colleagues in expressing concern about the OPI funding, and I'm wondering if the co-chairs understand, if they fully understand that we are not following the statutory language in the way in which we are addressing this OPI funding. I'm not clear that they do understand. I also think, because we're still here and June 29th hasn't arrived yet, that there is the opportunity to look at some general fund for OPI, and we should do that. And if that means making adjustments elsewhere in the other budgets, and I'm not speaking of DHS budgets, I'm looking at education again, I'm looking at K-12, if we need to look there to make this adjustment, that would be my recommendation. I know that's a hard recommendation for some people to hear, but, you know, we have this statutory obligation, and we need to meet it.
Commissioner Garrard?
I'll make it as brief as I can.
Yes, sir?
Just to back up, in the last session, the reason we got the deferred tax payments for OPI was because we added the disabled. So the comments of Senator Morissette and Senator Gordley are well made, and I would certainly join with them in bringing this to your attention in the future.
Okay, I hear my committee, your chair hears you.
The future is now.
I hear you. Let's let John finish this, and then we'll come back tomorrow with further discussion around this issue.
Line 31 is the cost of House Bill 2406 with respect to the seniors and people with disabilities budget. I will have an adjustment to make to yesterday's budget in the health services. It would have added another $200,000 or $300,000 of general fund. The total cost of 2406 is about 1.4 general fund for the 07-09 biennium. Line 32 would increase nursing facility rates to the 63rd percentile of costs, which is required under House Bill 3057, the provider tax bill. That bill passed the House this morning. It would add $9.8 million of general fund and associated federal match to reach that particular level. It had been in the governor's budget at the 50th percentile, or 50th 0.5 percentile, as I remember. Line 33 are some savings with respect to downsizing the Eastern Oregon Training Center, $800,000 of general fund along with federal match, 8 positions, 17.88 FTE. Line 34 I've alluded to previously. This is the Area Agency on Aging Equity issue, and this is a correction to the reshoot. As I reviewed that adjustment and asked the department to review it again, they said that they had taken out too much. That was the $2.9 million on line 13 that you, Representative Morgan, referenced. This is the adjustment that will correct that adjustment, if you will, the $706,000 of general fund, along with an adjustment to federal funds expenditure limitation. Line 35 is to remove some general fund of $2.4 million. Back when we talked about the rebalance, the agency had to pay the Social Security Administration for costs associated with the Disability Determination Services Unit, which is entirely federally funded. They had to repay money because they were challenged on some of the cost allocation associated with that program. This amount is still at issue, and it might be possible to get that money back from the Social Security Administration. So what we'll do here is to create a special purpose appropriation to the emergency fund for this amount. If the agency gets the revenue back from the Social Security Administration, that would not be allocated by the emergency board. If they don't get it back from the Social Security Administration, this money would be allocated from the emergency board. Finally, on line 36, it's to remove, again, some tobacco tax and federal match that was associated with the Healthy Kids program that had been put in this SPD budget.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bidden. What we will do, members, is on tomorrow when we reconvene at our regular time, we will start from here and bring up the subject of OPI for further discussion and further dates.
Just a matter of how we're going to process this. We're going to be back on the floor, I've been told, tomorrow afternoon. Do you know what time we're going to be back on the floor? Is it going to be the president was talking about an afternoon session?
I don't.
I would hope that we can be here and get the work done, and if they have a call, so we'll go take care of it and then come back.
And come back.
Can I say a quick
one? Yes.
With respect to that, we are going to hear about the department-wide support services budget. Ms. Baker has prepared materials for you, and they are going to be taken to your offices this afternoon. That's the main focus of tomorrow afternoon's subcommittee. We also have Senate Bill 157 that you have carried over, Madam Chair, and potentially some further discussion on this. We are also scheduled, we have scheduled a Saturday morning subcommittee meeting, I believe, at 10:30. So.
Thank you very much. So much for the good of the order. Closed hearing on work session on House Bill 5331, and we're dismissed.